Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler, December the 6th, 2013. Winter seems to be rearing its, well, I can't say ugly head. We're supposed to get this kind of weather this time of year, but boy, my friends up in Minnesota, where I just was a couple weeks ago, are really getting hammered tonight, along with a good part of the country. The cold wind is blowing through this country, as are lots of other things, and maybe some hot air flowing out of Washington as well. I've often wondered if we could perhaps take some of the hot air from Washington if we could not keep the rest of America warm. So maybe there's a green project, supposedly, that might work on that sort of thing. Anyway, as I started out saying, my name is Mike Cutler. I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And since my retirement, I've taken my show on the road to try to call attention to the myriad failings of our government in securing our borders, enforcing our immigration laws, and making certain that all of those components of the immigration system live up to the vital concept for which those laws were enacted. And those are just two simple things: protect innocent lives and protect the jobs of American workers. Gosh, you would never know that that's what we're talking about when you listen to the vitriolic rhetoric flowing from so many politicians, including the President of the United States, the Commander-in-Chief, who not only sits at the head of our military, but sits at the head of all federal law enforcement agencies. Quite astonishing. But we'll get to the immigration issue, and we're going to get to something else. There is a new twisted game being played. It's called the knockout game, where youngsters, thugs, assault people. And sometimes it's elderly. Sometimes it's the very young. And the name of this game is to punch somebody with such force that you knock them out with one shot. They go sprawling. Potentially, they could crack their skulls and die. It's a hell of a game. It's almost like a video game come to life by some lowlifes. And I'm going to have a wonderful guest on with me shortly, Horace Cooper, who is an adjunct fellow with the National Center for Public Policy Research. I've got some good friends over there. Horace has joined me before. The National Center has provided me with guests before. And he is also a part of this program, Project 21, of trying to show where our government is going wrong, whether it's issues about global warming, whether it's about the economy. It's a conservative perspective, but I have to tell you, you know, I'm a registered Democrat. Most of the time, what we're looking at here is purely American issues. And this division that has been artificially created to pit American against American flies in the face of why we have a First Amendment, which I would remind you, among other things, includes the provision of the right to seek redress of grievances. And as I like to say, if you don't have any grievances, check for a pulse or perhaps a flatline EEG. And also the right for peaceable assemblage. And the reason the Founding Fathers said that was because they understood that the democratic process requires debate, discussion, perhaps arguments. No problem with arguments. All they said is do it peaceably. Leave your guns, your clubs, and your knives at home. And I'm all for it, and that's what this program is about. So while primarily I focus on immigration and national security, when other compelling issues come to the fore, I do what I can to provide guests who have insight, expertise, perspectives worthy of our consideration. Horace certainly is such an individual. And by the way, you'd be interested to know, I think, that he also taught constitutional law at George Mason University in Virginia and was general counsel to the U.S. House Majority Leader, Dick Armey. He has great credentials, great perspective, lots of common sense, and he's a fun guest all at the same time. So you can't beat that. And I want to put two websites out there for you to check out. First of all, put in an unvarnished plug for my own website, michaelcutler.net, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-C-U-T-L-E-R, one word, michaelcutler.net. Also, I am a fellow with a terrific organization known as Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website is CAPSWeb, C-A-P-S, CAPSWeb.org. They are located in beautiful downtown, and I would guess warmer Southern California. And, I have to tell you, Santa Barbara, California, which is where they're located, is a great place to be when December and January and February roll around. They've had the privilege of being out there, got some great friends out there, and they are fortunate to live right on the Pacific coast, and I'm here on the Atlantic coast, and in between, we have all of America. And speaking of all of America, tomorrow, of course, is the anniversary, the remembrance of Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941, that is then President FDR Franklin Delano Roosevelt said was a day that would live in infamy. And in so many ways, it would seem that today we pay more attention to what took place on December 7th, 1941, more than 70 years ago. Think about that. Then we are paying attention to what happened on 9/11, other than to see this continuing encroachment to our expectations of freedom and privacy in the name of national security. But yet, what's remarkable is that both attacks, at least immediately, resulted in almost identical casualty numbers, about 3,000. Of course, where 9/11 is concerned, many more people have died or are dying, having been exposed to some pretty horrible toxins when the World Trade Center came down. But remarkable how America seems to be going in a really bizarre direction. I've often said that if Tom Clancy could have predicted the terror attacks of 2001 back in the 90s, and then if he had written a book where he accurately predicted what we would and would not do in the wake of those attacks, I think his publishers would have thought that he had lost his mind. I certainly think that some of our leaders have lost their mind. And that's something that I want to address before Horace joins us, because I am greatly perturbed. I'm perturbed that we have members of Congress who come forward, people like Dianne Feinstein, who chairs the Senate Intelligence Committee. Would there be some intelligence over there, you know? Talk about an oxymoron. She railed and railed about how Snowden and the Navy Yard shooter could have been given clearances. Just a week ago, not even a week ago, on the 1st, she was interviewed and talked about how we are more at risk of a terrorist attack today than perhaps 2 years ago, and then perhaps even the day before 9/11. So if you really believe that we are at a heightened risk for a terror attack, and if you really believe that there was something flawed, and I could understand why you would think it, and the way that security clearances were granted to Snowden, the guy who spilled the beans on the NSA. I mean, look, whether you think he did the right thing or the wrong thing, whether you think he's a hero or a traitor, you really have to wonder how the vetting process failed to pick up the fact that this guy wasn't trustworthy. I mean, that's what a security clearance is about. I used to have a top secret clearance. And it's a very thorough examination. It's kind of like visiting the doctor for a physical, a very intimate physical. They interview you for hours. They go out, interview your neighbors, your colleagues, pull up records, whatever they need to do, because if they're giving you a clearance, this is serious business. So clearly the politicians understand that. But where it comes to illegal aliens who sneak into the United States, then suddenly all is forgiven. Mayor Bloomberg, soon to be former Mayor Bloomberg, ranted and raved, "My God, they're not prosecuting people who trespass into public housing projects here in the Bronx," which is one of the boroughs in New York City. But on the same hand, or the other hand, while he screams about the need to prosecute people who trespass into public housing, he blithely ignores anybody who trespasses into America, because that's what running the border is. It's trespass. In fact, when I was an agent, there was a term that we used to describe somebody who came into the country by evading the port of entry. It was called entry without inspection. And in fact, we would just use those initials in our reports, and people knew what it meant, EWI, entry without inspection. Why is this serious? Well, it becomes readily apparent if you stop and understand why we have an inspections process. Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, and I'm not going to get heavy into law. That's not the point of this program. But I'm just telling you that whatever I tell you, you can substantiate. I don't just spew nonsense. It's important that you know that what I tell you is fact-based. That section of law, Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, categorizes what aliens may not be admitted into the United States. It starts out with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases. Let's remember Ellis Island was a quarantine station. It also includes aliens who have dangerous mental issues. They're mentally ill and violent or sex offenders, fugitives from justice, convicted felons, bank robbers, rapists, arsonists, and so forth, drug traffickers. Then it includes war criminals, spies, terrorists, human rights violators. And then we work our way down to people who would become public charges, hardly inconsequential when you see cities like Detroit going bankrupt, when you look at the deficit of the United States economy, over $17 trillion. And it includes aliens who would take the jobs of Americans, thereby creating unfair competition which would displace American workers and or lower the wages and working conditions of Americans. That's what's in the law. There's nothing in the law about skin color. There's nothing in the law about religion, about ethnicity, about tribal affiliation, about country of citizenship. The only distinction the immigration laws make are between citizens and non-citizens, and the term for a non-citizen is an alien. And the open borders crowd, I've come to call them the immigration anarchists, don't want you to use the word alien. Oh, my God, it's an insult. You can't say alien. The term alien simply means any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. It's not a pejorative. If you could see an insult in that definition, any person, not a citizen or national, I really want to know what the definition is that you find offensive. The problem with the definition is not that it insults anybody. It doesn't humiliate anybody. But what it does do is create a problem for some people. Those are the people that want open borders and want to have unlimited free access to America for people from around the world. That's an act of national suicide, folks. You don't leave your door open at night, especially when the police warn you that there are people determined to pull off burglaries and home invasions. You go to high-crime neighborhoods, in fact. You can almost always tell high-crime neighborhoods because the people have a whole bunch of locks on their doors and gates and grating on their windows, and you know that they're doing it to try to keep people out who would rob the blind or maybe do physical damage to them personally. So as soon as you see bars on windows, unless it's a prison, you know you're in a high-crime neighborhood. America, folks, is in a high-crime neighborhood, the world. We've seen terrorist attacks committed all over the world. Almost every day you pick up a newspaper, turn on the TV or the radio, and there's a report about something that happened somewhere and about the fact that we're still at risk. Nobody sounded the all clear. And then we kind of go back to sleep and we don't pay attention to it. And then we have an incident such as we had this past week. We woke up to the disturbing news that some radioactive materials had been stolen out of a truck in Mexico, not far from Mexico City. Apparently there was some medical treatment equipment that used radiation to treat cancer. It contained pellets of highly radioactive cobalt-60. According to published reports, you touch that stuff, you're as good as dead. It may take a couple days, and it won't be a pretty death, but it will kill you. It went missing. And the first concern is, oh, my God, do you think maybe terrorists want to get to it? Now, here's the problem with that material. It does not help you to build a nuclear bomb. It won't happen. Either a fission bomb or a fusion bomb, either what they call the atomic bomb or the H-bomb. Can't do it. But what you can do with that material is turn it in to a dirty bomb. And what does that mean? If you look at the Boston Marathon bombing, which, by the way, was carried out by a couple of individuals, the Tsarnaev brothers, who came here from Russia, the family claimed credible fear. If you send us back, we're going to be persecuted or worse. And as soon as they got lawful status, they went back to Russia. Well, they wanted to show how grateful they were to America for its kindness and generosity and compassion. So they set off bombs, if you remember, April 15th this year at the Boston Marathon. And what they did was they put in with the bomb all kinds of ball bearings and screws and stuff that when the bomb went off, would spew that material at high speed into those people who were unfortunate enough to be close to the explosion. It's an anti-personnel type weapon. It purposely fragments so that you get the maximum destruction of human flesh. Now imagine if it wasn't just screws and ball bearings, horrific as a situation as that is, but imagine if the material was highly radioactive. So even the person who survives but gets penetrated by the cobalt-60 most likely would die a terrible death within a matter of days or weeks. That was the fear. So at that moment, when that stuff went missing and you started to read the accounts in the newspapers, it certainly gave you cause for pause. And why did it give you cause for pause? I'll tell you why. Because, as it turned out, there was no GPS tracking device on the car or the material. As it turned out, there was no armed escort. Apparently, these guys were at a gas station, the driver with this material, and the next thing you know, they're robbed at gunpoint, and the people take the truck with what's in it, and they're gone. And DHS had the nerve to say, hey, don't worry about it. We have radiation detection equipment at ports of entry. Really? Radiation detection equipment at ports of entry? Do you think that the bad guys, if they were terrorists, would be driving it through a port of entry? Do you think that's what happens with the bulk of the drugs? Yes, I mean, sometimes they do smuggle drugs in that way, but how much stuff moves between ports of entry? And, of course, if that was to happen, well, let's face it, folks, all bets are off. That would not work. So you really need to understand how bad the problem is, how big the threat is, and that's what nobody wanted to talk about at DHS because they had no answers. And then you look at the way that political asylum has been done, and there have been continuing reports about terrorists who've gotten political asylum. There have been reports about members of the Mexican drug cartels who were getting political asylum. In some cases, they were coming here to carry out terrorist attacks. So you look at that and you say to yourself, what in the world are we doing? We're giving people political asylum who might well be terrorists, who might well be looking to come here and do harm to us. How in the world is this in the best interests of America or Americans? And that's something that just seems to fly under the radar. Nobody pays attention. Nobody seems to care. Nobody seems to want to care. I don't even know where to go with the conversation. Well, apparently, the House Immigration Subcommittee, where I've testified in the past, will be holding hearings next week. And I am holding my breath to see the questions. Chairman Gowdy, Trey Gowdy, great leader. I know that he's getting ready to figure out what in the world is going on to make the administration accountable. And that's really what's needed here, is accountability, because there has been no accountability. And therein lies the problem. You have a president of the United States who, for the longest time, said, yes, I have an uncle who was illegally present in the United States. I never met him. I never saw him. I didn't know where he was. Yesterday, breaking news, right around the time of the loss of Mandela, certainly a giant of leadership and morality, right around the time that news broke, the other story that broke, President Obama now admits that not only did he visit Omar Obama, but he had lived with him in Cambridge for a period of time while he was waiting for his own apartment to be prepared when he was going to school. This is crazy stuff. Our immigration laws are not supposed to be up for grabs. This isn't a game. This is supposed to be about protecting America and Americans, and for whatever reason, it's not happening. It's not happening, and people may well pay with their lives. There was a terrible accident last weekend when a Metro North train flew into a turn at 82 miles an hour, according to the black box on board. Now, I want you to stop and think about that. There's a black box on board. They monitor the speed of the train. The speed of the train was so high that the train became completely derailed. That was a 30-mile-an-hour turn, and the engineer on the train fell asleep, was glassy-eyed. They don't know what happened. They're still trying to sort it out. But they're doing criminal investigations because he might be facing criminal charges. We shouldn't be jumping to any kind of conclusions. We need all the facts before anything happens. But immediately, it was about accountability. They said, you were going too fast. There's a problem. Ironically, about a week earlier, I wrote an article for CAPS at USCIS, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, Speed Kills. USCIS is the division of the Department of Homeland Security that adjudicates applications for benefits. And so immediately they turned around and said, wow, there's a real problem here. Look at the way they're adjudicating these applications. The approval rate, as it turns out, is in the upper 90s. So really, do you think anybody really knows who is getting what sort of benefit? It's just not working, not in the least. And so what in the world do you do with that situation if, in fact, there's no integrity to the system by which you provide people with lawful status in the United States? It's hard to understand what in the world they're doing. But this is exactly the situation that we find ourselves in. We are dependent on our government doing the right thing by us, and in point of fact, it's not doing the right thing by us. In point of fact, what is happening now is endangering national security. It's endangering public safety. It's endangering the jobs of Americans. But meanwhile, we're supposed to blithely look at that situation and say, well, nobody's perfect. And I don't even know what to make of that kind of a situation. How in the world do you ignore the monumental screw-ups that are being committed? And I don't know what to say. The problem is I don't think anybody knows what to say. And therein lies the problem. And therein we're seeing, hopefully next week, oversight hearings. That is what Congress is supposed to do, instill oversight in programs. I mean, they're supposed to be the voice of the people. We, the people, hire the government to do the job for us. And it's these congressional oversight committees that are supposed to provide opportunities for oversight, to make people accountable, to say, listen, we've been giving you a gazillion dollars a year. Why in the world are you giving people who want to hurt us political asylum and allowing them to stay here? And that's something that needs to be understood. All I can say to you is that we've got a very severe problem here. I'm going to go off line just for a moment. I'm going to take a break, and I'm going to call my guest, make sure that he's available, because I certainly want to hear Horace's perspectives on what is going on right now. So bear with me for just one moment. Well, Horace will be joining us momentarily, folks. Sorry for that delay, but wanted to make sure that everything is up and running, as they say. So here we are. That should be good to have him join with us. But again, this is really about accountability. And when I provide this information, what I'm hopeful will happen, folks, is that you will take the information that we provide you with on this program and make certain to reach out to your elected representatives and make them understand what your concerns are. There's too much mythology floating around as to why, in fact, we have immigration laws. There's nothing about those laws that are unfair. What's unfair is that we're not enforcing them. What's unfair is that last year, foreign workers in the United States, both legal and illegal, wired, that is to say, they used money remitters, a wire service, to send money out of the country to the tune of $200 billion. But let's bring Horace on. Happy Friday,
Horace. Good evening. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing better now that you're there. I think
a minor
forgot to wind your electric
issue,
watch.
But we got it resolved. What's
there
that?
There you go. I said perhaps you forgot to wind your electric watch.
No, we had a little family issue, but we got it resolved.
Excellent. I'm glad all's well that ends well, as the saying goes.
That's what they
How
say.
Are you? First, let me start out wishing you a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays to you and to everybody out there, whether it's Hanukkah, Christmas, whatever holiday you celebrate. This is a joyous time of the year, even if it is getting to be a little bit of a cold time of the year.
Yeah, I will say the same. Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you.
I just got back from Texas, and it was 80 on the day that I left, and people say that you can't get into the Christmas spirit, I will tell you, yes, you can.
Yes, you can.
Well, yes, you can.
I was in Minnesota 2 weeks ago. I'm glad I'm not there today, though. I was watching that forecast.
Oh, I know. Absolutely.
It must be global warming. That must be what the deal is.
Absolutely.
Anyway, we were looking at this issue, and I was speaking with Judy Kent of Project 21. This knockout game, boy, it's a hell of a game, isn't it?
Well, it's everything but a game, in fact. As you know from your law enforcement background, it's really important for the community to come together, particularly at the leadership level, the mayor, governor, et cetera, so that the law enforcement gets the direction and support that they need. I think your police officer on the street is always willing and available to try to deal with these kinds of challenges. The problems come when certain groups use language to characterize what they're doing, which is just basic law enforcement protecting the citizenry at large, when they call that racist, when they call that some form of discrimination and unfair treatment, or even this new phrase, I guess not so new, but newish phrase, racial profiling. These kinds of attacks make it harder for law enforcement to carry out their responsibilities. They want to do what they can to protect innocent people, but if the community doesn't come together, and particularly those elected leaders don't say, yes, prioritize this, let's stop this, we could, quote, knock out the knockout game. It's not a problem that's happening hundreds of thousands of times yet. We don't want to wait
operative word,
until
yet.
It turns into that. That's correct.
Right. You know,
and we don't
you allow a roof,
get to that
you
point.
Allow a roof to leak long enough, you will bring down the house.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And this idea that some young men, mostly black, are going around attacking people, mostly non-black, when they least expect it, and in a harmful way that has led to deaths in a couple of cases and serious injuries in other cases, is somehow not that big a deal, according to Huffington Post. According to a couple of other news organs like MSNBC, it's just an excuse to unleash the police department. That's what they're arguing, instead of saying, let's wipe this out early on and stop it. Now, they used to tell us, the progressives, if we could save one life, what wouldn't we do? Well, yeah. I want to turn that back on them. If we could save one life. Now, we know that this is moving up to the thousands. This is no longer in the tens or dozens or hundreds. This is moving up to the point where big cities, Philadelphia, New York, Houston, Miami, are reporting a couple dozen cases or more on a consistent basis. When you start adding that up, you start rapidly approaching a number that could explode to an exponential level.
Now, it's outrageous. You know, Mayor Bloomberg here in New York and the police commissioner, Kelly, said, well, we have to look at it. We have to investigate it to make sure it's not an urban myth. Is that amazing or is that amazing?
That is unbelievably amazing, and it is unbelievably uninformed. It is unbelievably naive, and it is unbelievably dangerous.
Well,
thugs are preying on innocent people, and the signal should never be, we'll get around to that. The signal needs to be, we're going to shut this down now.
Well, you know, it's funny because Mayor Giuliani, and I have my issues with Giuliani on immigration, but he used to talk about broken windows. If you allow small crimes to go, look out. And that's why they went after the squeegee guys that would shake people down for money at a stoplight with their, you know, wet rags or squeegees or whatever they had with them to try to intimidate people into giving them money.
Absolutely. And it worked. It absolutely worked. You know, I had an encounter shortly after I got my first BlackBerry, I was in New York City, and I was so captivated. These smartphones can be very captivating, but I haven't advanced to the iPhone yet. I'm still in the BlackBerry world,
okay.
Being the president. But I was so captivated by it, I wasn't paying attention as I was walking in Manhattan, and I walked down an alley accidentally instead of reaching the corner street and making a right turn. I walked in between two buildings, and I didn't realize I had done so. I was staring so intently at reading these emails until I saw the hand that I brushed up against with my phone, and I went, oh, sweet Jesus. You know, I knew this was not going to end well. You are not going to believe what happened to me. One guy turns to another guy, and he says, the Giuliani Nazis are here to rat us out. And they all get up, and they run to high heavens. And I look around, and I go, thank you, thank you. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Giuliani. Who could imagine?
You had a religious moment.
Who could imagine safety coming, but it's so common sense, by creating an environment where people understand that lawbreaking isn't going to be tolerated. But this is even more dangerous than just that concept, because I think you're right. That concept is an important one. But this is a more dangerous and pernicious problem, and the reason it is that we are going to look the other way only because of the race of these thugs. That's dangerous.
I agree.
The young people...
And by the way, for the purpose of my audience, you're African-American.
Yeah, I'm a proud Black American, and I think all of America has the right to express their views, and I think it's important, and I appreciate programs like yours that are prepared to let people see. There's a big diversity of opinion in America. Everybody doesn't agree with you on every issue you raise. Everyone doesn't agree with me on every issue I talk about.
Correct.
But what we should be celebrating is that there is this variety and diversity of opinion. It is dangerous, let me repeat that, however, it is dangerous to say, because I'm Black, I should either say certain things or not say certain things. And it is dangerous to have a circumstance where just because I'm Black, that if I say certain things, I can get away with, but others cannot. It is dangerous to maintain a society that operates that way. So we at Project 21 really work aggressively to try to say, let's talk about the things that people know, people understand, people appreciate, but feel like they're not free to acknowledge. We need to have that healthy discussion. Any thug beating up any innocent party needs to be held accountable. The skin color of the person is irrelevant. What we need to have a conversation about, if we're going to talk about race, is family formation. We need to talk about the need to have more fathers play an influence in the lives of some of these young street hooligans. We need to have a conversation that says, why do so many people believe that this could be a game? Not only did you beat up someone, but you're so cold-blooded, you videoed it, and you're posting it so you can show it to your friends. I want to make one other quick observation.
Sure.
During the Zimmerman trial, at the end, because people thought it was going on and on and on and on, and finally the outcome was clear, a jury of 12 peers decided that Mr. Zimmerman had not committed some form of murder. But during the latter part, they interviewed a forensics expert who looked at the cell phone of Trayvon Martin. Among the exchanges were photos and text messages, including his gun, but also bragging about his role in a knockout game experience. We were told by MSNBC and by the progressives and even by a president who said he would look a lot like my son. We were told that this person was as pure and innocent as the driven snow. The story turns out to be a lot more murky than was let on, and that the poor innocent person who was the victim of this in his past has been forced, because of his race, it appears, to not speak out and explain that he was a victim of Trayvon Martin, and the people's property who was stolen were not speaking out. The principal and the administrators at the school who caught him trafficking in the items that he had were also agreeing not to speak out. All of this silence doesn't help us have a healthy conversation about what to do about the hoodlums and thugs that prey on the innocents in this country. Now, there's too much black-on-white violence, but the truth of the matter is there's just too much black-on-black violence. There's just too much violence going on in the inner city. And whoever the victims are, we ought to be wanting to stand up with them and stand against those that prey on them.
I couldn't say it better myself. You know, we've got to get past, you know, I just find it remarkable that we allow race to be the dividing point, not good versus bad.
Absolutely.
You know, I had an interesting experience. I was participating in a debate at a college campus. And for those of you out there, if you become aware of opportunities for panel discussions, debates, let me know. You can reach me through my website, michaelcutler.net. You can go to capsweb.org. I love doing these events. Debate and discourse is vital. It's integral to America. But
absolutely,
the young lady I was debating accused me of having a Eurocentric view. Now, I have to tell you, Horace, I was appalled, and I did something I almost never do in a debate. I mean, you know, I'm well-trained in debate. I've been doing debating since high school. I never lost. I was on my college team. I grabbed the microphone. I sprang to my feet, and I called her out. I said, no, you're not going to get to say anything now. I said, racism perpetrated by anyone against anyone is unacceptable. I said, you lady are a racist. You're a bigot. What in the
absolutely
world does my European ancestry have to do with a discussion about the enforcement of immigration laws that draw no such distinction? I said, in fact, if you look at Lady Liberty, Lady Justice, rather, if you want, give me an address. I will mail you a photograph. Pay attention to the blindfold. Justice
absolutely
is supposed to be blind about race, religion, ethnicity, gender. It's about facts. Period.
That's right.
And people
were
stunned.
Right.
I had professors come up to me and say, wow, that's refreshing. We never heard anybody do that before. I said, we have developed a society that has become spineless and ballless, where someone throws a punch at you, and if you're the wrong person, wrong color, wrong flavor, you're supposed to apologize for dare allowing your nose to get in the way of their fist.
And
how's that for a way of
out,
describing it?
Our system is supposed to work on the basis of discussion, debate, even healthy disagreement. They help to refine us. They help us to look back and reassess. That's a good and constructive way to operate, particularly in the area, the sensitive area of race. We ought
yep
to be able to do that. That will help us make progress. On this issue of the crime associated in Knockout, we ought to want to stand together, united.
Yep.
There isn't a pro-Knockout and an anti-Knockout that stand on equal moral grounds. There's only one good side here. And we need to be able to have that conversation, and we need to be able to understand, we need to be able to comprehend. Shame on the mayor of New York for saying, I can't have salt at my table, but also saying, I can't call out a thug for preying on the elderly, for preying on the young, for preying on any innocent civilian who had the temerity to just exercise the freedom of coming and going in the nation that calls itself the land of the free. Shame on a mayor who won't crack down on that kind of misbehavior.
And, you know, you have a guy who I've always had problems with, Al Sharpton, taking a position against it. Now, that, you know, something is going on when Sharpton takes a better position on a crime of violence than the mayor of the city of New York.
Yeah, I saw that. I give him props for having done
yeah
so.
I agree.
I don't
right
understand
it
entirely, but it is the right thing to do. And so I'm going to give him credit for having done so. And I'm calling out a lot of these other people. And I start with, I know I just gave Mr. Sharpton props. I start with the notion, though, that it's been men like him who have made it hard for mayors to do some of the right things. Now, I'm calling out on the mayors across the country. You've got to do the right thing. You've been elected. You hold this responsibility, and you don't say to the police chief, and you don't say to the officer on the street, watch it, watch it. If we catch you, if we find out that you, quote, racially profiled a particular person, we're going to hold you responsible, not them, for the crimes that they're doing.
Now,
police
officers aren't
racially profiling anybody anyway.
But, you know, now there's an immigration component. I'm just going to touch on it. And you know, I think we've had this conversation, but if not, here's something for you to ponder. The same journalists that have apoplexy at the mere thought that a police officer profiled, and what do we mean by profiling? Let me give you an example. You know, I was with the Drug Task Force for half my career, and so I might be out on surveillance, whether it was with DEA or the FBI or the New York City Police Department. We were part of the same task force, state police. So you have, let's say, a white kid in a black neighborhood or a black kid in a white neighborhood at 3 o'clock in the morning with out-of-town tags, driving a very expensive car, and he's about 23 years old, and you say to yourself, well, the kid doesn't match the ethnicity of the neighborhood. This is a block where we've had numerous drug arrests. He's driving a very expensive vehicle from out of town. We better go talk to him. Is that profiling? You bet. Is it unfair? Absolutely not, because there's a totality of circumstance surrounding that stop. I think you will agree with me.
Oh, I do agree with you. I went to law school. And,
I know you did. I know your background.
That's called probable cause.
It sure is. But here's my point.
That's called probable
cause. As long as the stop is done civilly, when I was a kid, I had a Jaguar. My parents had passed away. And I bought a used Jag. I was in a terrible crash. A drunk driver plowed into me, so I bought a used Jag. I was getting pulled over every month, you know. 23-year-old kid running around in a Jag Roadster, you know you're going to get pulled over. As long as it's done in a civil, polite fashion, son, I want to make certain that all is in order. Let me see a license and registration. Turn off the ignition, please. Fine.
Correct.
Here's my license. Here's my registration. Here's my insurance card. 3 minutes later, the cop looks at everything. He says, Mr. Cutler, have a nice day. Hope you're enjoying your car. Yes, I am. Great. Everyone's happy. Now, here's the deal, though. The same journalists who scream bloody murder about profiling will be the same ones who talk about the Latino or the black or the Jewish vote. What do you make of that?
Mostly hypocrisy, but I'm gonna say something that I think your listeners need to understand. All human beings operate from experience.
Yep.
All human beings. Almost all Americans who can, not all, but almost all who can, locate themselves in a place so that they and their family can feel secure and comfortable and calm at night and at day when they come and go. By that I mean they buy their home, they take shopping trips, they engage in their exposure to the community in places where they predict that they're going to be safe in doing so.
Yep.
Because there is a disproportionate, and this is the part, the first part you understand. I think you'll understand the second part, though. Because there is a disproportionate number of young black men engaging in criminal behavior, it does make it harder for people of goodwill to go with simply, geography is the only thing I need to worry myself about.
Yep.
Because in your 13% of the population and the males between the age of 18 and 26 are not even 4% of the population, and you're engaging in between 27 and 37, depending on how the statistics are done, as much as a third of all the crime that is happening is this one group. Like I said after 9/11, if terrorists didn't happen to so frequently come from the countries that have oil-making capabilities and reside in the Middle East, I wouldn't be so worried when I'm sitting on the plane asking myself, who is it that I need to keep my eye on? It is the same exact phenomenon that explains why people are concerned. So I do not get pulled over a lot. I don't get pulled over even once a year. But to the degree that I get pulled over and there's a misunderstanding, I get it. It's not the officers that are creating the misunderstanding. It's a whole number of hoods that are making it the case. Here's what I want. I want to be the guy sitting in the classroom, and the teacher says, okay, I'm getting ready to give the assignments out, and this person takes their notepad out, they're ready for it, and the rest of the class groans, oh, there's that guy, he's going to ace the test, he's going to throw off the curve, he's going to be the one studiously. Do you know one group that comes to mind when I think I'm in the middle of the night, I'm unfamiliar locations, and I come across them, and I relax? Mormons on bicycles. That would be the best way to sneak up on me and attack me, because my experience has been that group, they're safe. I can relax. I'm not worried. Okay, it's 2 a.m. I don't really want to talk about the Book of Mormon right now, but fine, we can have that conversation because I'm not frightened. That's the kind of mindset that a community that can have a real conversation about issues of race could have healthily. But we don't, because unlike most of the hosts, programs like yours are willing to, but most of the mainstream media aren't willing to let us have this kind of conversation.
Well, you know, before you came on, I was talking about the beauty of the First Amendment. It's not just about freedom of press, speech, and religion. It's also about the right to seek redress of grievances, and boy, is there a list of those. And it's about the right to for peaceable assemblage. Now, why do they want peaceable assemblage? Because they know you have got to sit down and have that conversation or the argument or maybe even a screaming match if need be. All they said was leave your guns, your knives, and your clubs at home and have at it.
Absolutely.
Be able to express yourself. Work it out.
And that's what our system is predicated on. It is predicated on that ability to have that healthy conversation. The knockout game is terrible. It's not a game. It's a terrible preying on of innocents across the nation. We should come together as a community and insist our leaders stop it. We did it with carjacking. It still happens rarely, but when it became a problem in the 80s, even the Congress got into the act and said, we're going to stop this. We need to come together as a community, and we need to find out who those people are who say you're Eurocentric. We need to identify them, call them out, and the rest of us come together and deal with this problem.
I agree, and that was why what I was also talking about before you came on is about this business about immigration. I want to see America welcoming those people in, but we need to have that process in place, the inspections process. It needs to work effectively, and we need to make certain that there are penalties if people evade the inspections process that's supposed to keep out the criminals and the terrorists and the people with dangerous diseases and the spies and the human rights violators. Doesn't that make sense?
If the first thing that I know about the person that wants to come and visit me is that they're a criminal, I'm skeptical about letting them come to visit me. How about all of the people in the world that are interested in being a visitor to me, how about let's start with they're not criminals? If you've broken the law, overstayed your visa, or just came over without any kind of acceptance or allowance, you are, in fact, a criminal. That's just a fact. That's not Cooper's assertion. It's not his hope. It's a fact.
Well, you know how I define it?
That should cause a forfeiture of any opportunities going forward for any host. That's how I would treat it. And frankly, when I look particularly at South and Latin America, that's how they treat it.
Absolutely. Every reasonable country does. You know, I like to put it this way. The difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. How does that work for you, Horace?
That starts with exactly the example I was giving you. I agree with you. Well, I've really enjoyed tonight. It's always fun.
I gotta ask
you
a quick question for the sake of my audience. Two quick questions, and then I know you gotta go. Project 21, how did it get its name?
I don't know the answer to that. The 21 part was 21st century, and I guess it was a 21st century project for racial inclusion in some sense, but we started as a result of the Rodney King riots. A bunch of us professionals decided we needed to make sure the American people knew that rioting and stealing VCRs was not an appropriate response or any kind of legitimate response to dishappiness, unhappiness with a trial outcome.
Excellent. And finally, if there's any website or anything that you're working on that you'd like my audience to be aware of, here's a great opportunity for you to put it out there.
Well, check us out at www.nationalcenter.org. We're going to be following the knockout game. We're going to be following a lot of issues that are happening, the so-called search and frisk issue.
Stop and frisk.
Stop and frisk, rather, yes. And a number of Supreme Court issues, including the contraception mandate. We're going to be heavily involved in all of the public policy issues that are happening in America today.
Well, that's fabulous, and I'm going to have to get you back on to have a continuing discussion both about this supposed game, I call it thuggery, and these other issues, because that really is what's really important. I think this is a far more important discussion than who's winning Dancing with the Stars, but then what do I know?
I agree with you. Thanks again for having me on.
Horace, thank you so much, and have a wonderful weekend. Merry Christmas to you and your family. Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas to you and yours, too.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to stay with you folks just for another couple of minutes because I just want to finish up a little bit. But I think what Horace said is spot on. You know, we have allowed ourselves as a country to divide ourselves along ethnic, racial lines, and it's not what we're supposed to be doing. Martin Luther King was very clear. He said, you know, we judge a person not by the color of his skin, but by the content of his soul. I mean, that's what's supposed to be important. This other stuff really is superficial, but if we allow politicians and those with an axe to grind or an agenda to give more credibility to people because there's an agenda in play, then some pretty terrible outcomes are likely to result. The kind of discussion that we had tonight is vital, and you don't hear it on other programs. As I started out saying at the beginning of my program this evening, this radio show that I have is an outgrowth of my desire after 9/11 to provide information that you're not getting on television or other radio programs. It is extremely, extremely important that the American people sit down and have honest conversations about the issues of the day that profoundly impacts America and Americans. And when I look at comprehensive reform, and I'm going to go back to that, and I had mentioned it in my email earlier today that I would talk about it, because I want you to know what's going on. There are rumors flying all over Washington, and, you know, Washington is a rumor mill, that John Boehner, Speaker of the House, is thinking about going forward with comprehensive reform, and maybe we won't give the illegal citizenship, but we'll give them permission to work. We don't have enough jobs to go around right now. It makes no sense to entice more people to come to America to take jobs Americans desperately need so that the wages will go down. That's what's really happening, folks. Labor is a commodity. The way that you keep the value of a commodity down is to flood the market with the commodity. In fact, there is a legal term for putting a lot of commodity on the market at one time to drive down the price. It's called dumping. D-U-M-P-I-N-G, dumping. So if you dump a commodity, then, oh my gosh, they'll come after you, unless that commodity is labor. You see, the way that the wage price mechanism works is that the American government is supposed to make certain that Americans do not face unfair foreign competition from foreign workers. In fact, prior to the Second World War, you need to know that the Labor Department ran immigration. That was how wages were built up. That is how jobs got to be better. That's how we created incentives for Americans to go to school and get that extra degree or go to trade school and acquire a trade. And I don't think that people who are tradesmen, by the way, are less valuable than people who have white-collar degrees. My dad was a plumber. And I don't think a journeyman plumber, a tradesman, or a carpenter, or a bricklayer, or an iron worker, or a machinist, or an auto mechanic is less important to society than an accountant or a school teacher or a secretary. These are all jobs that we need to have done and done properly. And as my dad used to say, if it wasn't for construction workers, surgeons would be conducting surgery in the middle of an open field, and they wouldn't even have any equipment to use, because if it weren't for the technicians and the scientists and the engineers and the people on the assembly line, there would be no radar, no X-ray machines, and all the other devices used in the medical field. You know, America is a very big orchestra, and we all have an instrument to play. But we have to make certain that it's a meritocracy, that those people who acquire the higher educations and the higher skills make more money. That's how you provide incentives. And for Alan Greenspan, as he did on April 30th, 2009, to go before Chuck Schumer's Immigration Subcommittee in the United States Senate and refer to Americans who have skills or education as the privileged elite, and then deride them for earning what he called a wage premium that he said needed to be reduced, and to do it by making American workers be subjected to the wage price mechanism of competition from foreign workers. Well, under the current laws, folks, that's illegal, and it should be illegal. This is a race to the bottom. We could certainly provide Bill Gates and Zuckerberg and all those other elitists with the cheapest labor they could find. But America will go away. The middle class will go away. And that isn't going to help anybody. On the day that America stops being a superpower, that is the day when darkness will descend across the globe. We see China flexing its muscles. God knows what they're thinking about in Beijing. But now they're trying to claim a big part of the airspace near their country. That's not a good situation. And I think that they are sensing that this country, the United States, is weak. We basically turned tail and ran from Iran. We're giving them carte blanche, pretty much, it would seem to me, to continue their nuclear program. And things will be very quiet for a couple of months, But what happens on the day when Iran has the critical mass it needs to assemble some nuclear weapons? I pray that that day never comes. My concern is it may happen. You know, I just wrote a commentary about Mexico and the nuclear materials. And at the very end, I said, if hope is not a strategy, then dumb luck is not a success. Hope is not a strategy. Hoping that Iran won't develop nuclear weapons is stupid, it's foolhardy, and it's a dangerous game. It's a dangerous game. It's not really a game. So understand the problems that we face today, folks. America needs to be preeminent, and the way we do that is by making sure that Americans do well. You cannot separate America from Americans or Americans from America. I know there are some characters, and I've met some of them, say to me, oh, you're old school, Mr. Cutler. Americans don't have to do well for America to do well. Boy, if you believe that story, have I got a fence to sell you. Abraham Lincoln was right. This is a country of the people, by the people, and for the people. And what that means is that the government of the United States should be behind the best interests of the citizens of this country, irrespective of race, religion, or ethnicity. That's the American dream, where hard work and talent, and maybe a little bit of luck thrown in for good measure, can help to write the next great success story. Those opportunities will go away if foreign workers are permitted to flood the labor market at will and undermine Americans who cannot compete with the foreign workers for the jobs that are desperately needed. This is crazy. It's a sellout, and it's a sellout of the American dream to the highest bidder by politicians looking for campaign contributions. And this is where we the people come in. You know, I always like to make the point that democracy is a spectator sport. That's not just a slogan, folks. What it really means is that the politicians need to hear from you. Congress is about to go into recess. During that time, you may well find your senators or your member of Congress, your House of Representatives, available for meetings. Please, I urge you, call your member of Congress, the House of Representatives, call your two senators. Bring as many of your friends with you as possible and make it clear to them that we need to have not only secure borders, and it's not just about the Mexican border, that's just the subterfuge, that's just a distraction. This is about making certain that the way that we admit people into the United States, that is to say foreigners, aliens, not an insult, we've had that conversation earlier, that program has to have integrity, and we have to provide a very strong and clear first impression. Our immigration laws provide that first impression. And today, folks, today, we have convinced people from around the world, aspiring illegal aliens, we've told them very clearly, this administration has made it very clear, that in America today, you can violate the law and you should have every expectation of getting away with those violations. That, folks, is a dangerous first impression. My dad used to say to me that I would teach people how they should treat me by demonstrating what I was willing to accept. Well, there's two ways of looking at it where this discussion is concerned. First of all, we need to convince aliens who would come visit us that we take our laws and our sovereignty seriously. Second of all, we need to explain to our politicians that any politician that doesn't want to stand up for America and Americans and the American working family needs to find a new way of making a living. It's in America's best interest that Americans do well. This concern that if we educate foreign kids, then they go back home, so let's staple green cards onto their diplomas, bad idea. I have a better idea. Let's start educating American kids. We did it in the past. We should be doing it now. If you have children living in poverty, and if they have gumption, if they have that drive to succeed, and they have no money to go to school and no way of going to school, so the only way out of poverty is to become part of a gang and commit crime, then they're going to do that. If you're living in some of these houses, and as an agent, let me tell you, I have seen those houses on the inside, and you don't want to go there, where there are rats scurrying around in the hallways, where it's frigid in the wintertime, where there's, you know, roaches running everywhere, the stench is unbearable. You don't want to live in that environment. And if you don't have an opportunity to bootstrap yourself out of poverty by education and hard work, that you will find the alternative. And for too many inner-city kids, between the fact that there are broken families is that we have a broken educational system and a dysfunctional government that could care less about the average American and more about campaign contributions. Recently during a debate, I was asked, how do we fix what's wrong with America? Because there's so many things wrong. I said, we really just need to address two things, campaign finance and the political parties. Those are the two places where the damage is being done. As a federal employee, I was not allowed to accept a cup of coffee. But we find that politicians are taking money with both hands. They call them campaign contributions. The only reason that somebody gives a politician serious money is because they're expecting that politician to do something that the politician would not normally want to do. Where I come from, that's called a bribe. And that's exactly what we're dealing with. We're dealing with legalized bribery known as campaign contributions. So that's one of the problems. The other problem that we have, folks, is that you have political parties that are looking to remain in power and tend to pull the strings of the politicians who are in that party. And it's both parties. This isn't one party over the other. This is about both parties being responsible. And if you go to the House of Representatives and you realize that they've got an individual who holds the position of the whip, then goodness gracious, you know that there's something terribly wrong if the guy that runs the show is called a whip. If that doesn't sound quite a bit like Tony Soprano and one of the enforcers, then I really don't know what does. So in point of fact, what people really need to understand is that we've got to get real campaign finance, and we the people have really got to make a point of making everybody understand that we're not going to accept this nonsense anymore. But that is going to require that you go out there and make your voice heard to those people who were elected to represent you. And that's why I always like to make that point that democracy is not a spectator sport. This is something that I expect of all of you. Take the information that you get on this program, find other what you believe to be sources of reliable information, cross-check, cross-reference them with other sources, come to your own educated conclusions, and then please, folks, make certain that you get your elected representatives to do just that, represent you. Always great joining you. It was great having Horace Cooper on with me earlier today to talk about the so-called knockout game. Please get a hold of your community leaders. Push back against those things that you see that are happening that are wrong-headed. If this is supposed to be a government by the people, then we need to make certain that our voice gets heard. We need to be the best employer of our elected officials that we can be. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the solution to so many of our problems. Really great joining you. I look forward to seeing you again next week at the same time on the Michael Cutler Hour. Meanwhile, please, I see I have a phone call here. Before I sign off, let me just see who we have calling in. You're speaking to Mike Cutler. Who's calling in?
Hello, Michael. This is Steve Salvi.
Steve Salvi, how are you, my friend? Merry Christmas. You know, it's funny. I was going to call you. I was about to sign off, and I just saw your phone up there. Merry Christmas to you and your family. Happy New Year. What's going on in Ohio?
To you, too. Just want to give you a quick call. It was a great show. I liked a lot of the comments you make. I'm glad that you asked your listeners to continue to call members of Congress or visit their offices over the break because, it's still possible. They're still in session. Unlikely something could happen, but it's still possible. If it doesn't, yeah, definitely if your listeners would go visit their representatives at their home offices, that would be terrific. Great idea, great show, and happy holidays to you, Mike.
Happy holiday to you, Steve. It's always great to hear your voice. I'm glad it sounds like you're doing well, and I thank you for calling in tonight.
Well, and I'll give you a call at home later this week.
Do that. You know, let me just end this thing. You know, I was talking about what's wrong with politics, and of course we immediately come to the two oldest professions. So why don't I end the program by describing the similarities between the two oldest professions. What do you think of that idea?
Well, just be careful because I've been involved in it for about 30 years.
I won't ask which one. Well, this is a similarity, folks, between prostitution and politics. Both professions begin with the letter P. Both professions involve lots of people getting screwed. In both professions, the practitioners will assume any position, no matter how ridiculous, uncomfortable, or contrary to common sense, for the right price. In prostitution, the clientele bring their fantasies that the prostitute tries to fulfill. In politics, the constituents bring their concerns, and the politicians respond by making promises that they fulfill by creating fantasies. STDs can give the clients and prostitutes a case of buyer's remorse or perhaps a case of something worse, while voters may well suffer buyer's remorse when they come to find out what their elected official does once he or she is sworn into office. Talk about the gift that keeps on giving. How does that work for you, Steve?
Well, Mike, as I say, my role in politics has been to basically keep the politicians doing what they should do and eliminate as much corruption as possible in the system. And, I think that's part of what you're doing on your show and what you did for the to benefit the country. And keep up the good work. And I would just ask all your listeners to not avoid politics, but to get involved and make sure your members of Congress are working in your best interest, in the interest of the country.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Steve. Thank you so much for calling in. Great to hear your voice. And let's, in fact, talk offline sometime later on this week.
Perfect. Have a good evening.
You too. Great weekend to you. And that was Steve Salvi, folks. In fact, I had the privilege and pleasure of meeting Steve when we were both in Washington this past July 15th at the D.C. March for Jobs, sponsored by the Black American Leadership Alliance. So let's wrap up the show finally. And again, please go to your elected representatives. Make certain that they hear from you. Also go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Please go to capsweb.org. A great bunch of folks out there in Santa Barbara. I hope they're sunning themselves well and enjoying the weather that we don't have in New York right now, or that most of us don't have actually across the country right now. I thank you for listening, and we'll see you all again next week, same time, same place, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Good night, everybody.